We've got an economist up here that's going to pretend like he's an agronomist, so I'm kind of taking a huge risk here. And I didn't sleep at Holiday Inn Express last night, so I'm really putting myself at risk. We do have an agronomist on this as a co-author. Dorvar is on there, but I have to be up front and say, if there's criticisms, faults, blame myself and Terry, not Dorvar, because myself and Terry are responsible for much of what's in here. I mentioned fertilizer because if we had time, I've got a little bit on fuel, but I think we'll probably just stick with the fertilizer discussion. I think we all know what the situation is, and it's a lot different today, as we already heard, than it was maybe a year ago, but the volatility of crops and fertilizer has been at unprecedented levels. Also, irrigation pumping costs, because I'm going to bring that into play, because that has an impact as well. Even though all the prices are down right now, we know that we could actually be back to some fairly high levels, you know, within the next several years. So while the demand for this information might not be as much today, we do believe that, you know, it's still around. Like I said, prices of all fertilizer nutrients increased rather substantially and then subsequently have decreased in recent years. The other thing, though, is the magnitude of the changes varied a lot based on the nutrient in the product. What your recommendation is to one producer might be different than another based on the form. Specifically, a year ago, the differences between liquid and dry were quite large. And because of this volatility, we had a lot of questions from producers asking about what recommended rates are and whatnot. Just to kind of show you, I mean, we know prices have been crazy. I mean, nitrogen for years and years and years, liquid or dry, somewhere around 20 to 25 cents, and then it kind of went crazy. P and K, the same thing, you know, almost no volatility. So the reason I decided to keep show these graphs in that long-term history is I'm going to come back in a little bit and say we've never included prices in our recommendations. And you could argue, looking at graphs like that, you probably didn't need to. There was really no reason because there was no volatility. This is pumping costs, just because in a minute I will talk about irrigation a little bit. The big difference between pumping costs is you can see that in 2005, we were hitting a major peak or major spike there that wasn't yet corresponding with some of the fertilizer prices. So in 2005, we started having some high prices, but we also had this double effect going on for irrigators. Grain prices, same thing, as the volatility has been real high. So we know that whether we're talking inputs or outputs, the volatility has been real high. This is a chart going back for a lot of data on wheat and corn to nitrogen price ratios, and I've got it for the fall time period, August to October, saying this is what producers might be thinking if they're putting on nitrogen in the fall or fertilizer in the fall, and then again what it looked like in the spring or the winter when they do a top dress. And this might be a little bit of reason why people say this is why you economists quit talking about prices. Especially if you look at 2009, i.e. the fall of 08, the spring of 2009. Huge difference from the fall versus the spring. So what we often hear people say is, why do we have to talk about input prices? We can't predict them anyway. They change so much. But I would also argue that those graphs both show long-term downward trends, which clearly say, come on, the price ratios today on average are different than they were in the past. Therefore, it seems like our fertilizer recommendations maybe should account for that. This is similar data for phosphorus, so basically shows the same pattern for the most part. Okay, so that's kind of the situation where we're at. I think we all know that. The problem is most fertilizer recommendations for a specific nutrient do not account explicitly for the prices of that nutrient, i.e. our nitrogen recommendations don't ask for the price of nitrogen. They don't ask for the price of the crop being fertilized. So that's a problem from an economic standpoint, we would argue. Also, there's very few, and I put in parentheses, if any, fertilizer recommendations for one nutrient that actually account for the cost of another. You know, when's the last time I saw a fertilizer recommendation for nitrogen ask for the price of phosphorus? You know, and we were arguing that maybe they should. Then that last point is kind of where we were at. We had people start asking, you know, how do I need to change rates? And we all knew that, well, when the price of phosphorus goes to $1 a pound, you probably should cut back. I think we're all pretty good. Even economists are pretty good on getting the direction. It's the magnitude part that's a little difficult. So we all kind of knew that, well, yeah, it makes sense. You'd probably cut back. But then the next question is, well, how much? And we really had no framework to answer that question. And that's what we wanted to get at. As economists, we struggle with, we want to be able to give them a specific number. So what we did, and note at the bottom here, it says, initially this all started in late 2005, myself and Terry Kastens, Alan Schlegel and Troy Dummler, and we were strictly focusing on nitrogen. Okay, and what we did is we said, well, we're going to start with the K-State fertilizer recommendations for N and P. Back in 2005, we were only focusing on N, as published in our publication, MF2586. And then we developed production functions that could incorporate prices. Okay, now there's some key assumptions, and if you don't buy into these key assumptions, you're not going to agree with any of the results we have. The K-State recommendations do not explicitly account for prices. And I'll show you the formula in a second. What we said is, but when we make those recommendations, specifically those that are coming out and those that are published in that MF2586, we believe that somewhere back in the background, agronomists actually recognize prices matter. Okay, and what we said is, we're going to use the 10-year average prices prior to when they came out. And as an example, the 10-year average price for wheat, $3.22 a bushel, corn $2.35, nitrogen, and that's a kind of an average of urea, UAN, and anhydrous, about 21 cents a pound, and phosphorus or phosphate, 24.5 cents. Now, you'll never see those numbers explicitly ever mentioned, but our point was is we think that implicitly the agronomists fertilizer that are making fertilizer recommendations must believe prices matter. Because clearly, if you'd ask, well, what if the price of nitrogen was $10 a pound? I think most people say, well, you wouldn't apply any nitrogen at all. So they, you know, we just, what the numbers are, we're not sure. Okay, we also said that the recommended rates for one nutrient, as an example, nitrogen, assume other management factors are non-limiting. In other words, how you treat nitrogen is independent of phosphorus. And we've got pretty good evidence that that's what we believe, because if you look at the nitrogen recommendations, we don't ask for soil test phosphorus levels. When you look at phosphorus recommendations, we don't ask for soil test nitrogen levels. So we're kind of saying we're kind of treating those two independently. And then a final one is we said, and this wasn't the initial work, this is the subsequent work, is that the expected P response can be represented with a quadratic plateau similar to what we're doing with N. Now, I'm not going to go through all the work on the N, but I'm going to show you a little bit. And we tested the N. We said we found statistically that was probably one of the best functional forms to use of the ones we tested. And we just assumed that that same approach would make sense for phosphorus. Okay. Well, so a little bit of background of how we got into the nitrogen stuff. So initially, remember, we're focusing on nitrogen only. As I mentioned, the K-State nitrogen recommendations don't factor in prices. So as an example, for wheat, you've got an N recommendation, which is driven entirely by yield goals. And then what else is out there, you know, manure credits and whatnot. So that yield goal and that factor of 2.4 basically says an extra pound of N equates to 0.42 bushels, but it's assuming a linear relationship, okay? Someone tells me I've got a yield goal of 40. Someone else says 50. We're going to have a linear relationship between our N recommendations for those different yield goals. Well, we know that in a limiting factor framework, there's a lot of argument that a linear plateau is the right relationship, that the response between nitrogen and yield is linear. There's plenty of literature out there in the agronomic literature that suggests that that might make sense. The problem as an economist is we hate that. You know, as an economist, that kind of takes us out of the picture. It says prices don't matter in a linear plateau world. Because what it says is in a linear plateau world, you either put on none or you put on the amount where you plateau. It's as simple as that. There's no in-between. What we also know, and I'll show you in a little bit, that an average of multiple linear plateaus might actually be non-linear. You know, okay, and that's where all of a sudden maybe starts becoming interesting again. So this is a linear plateau framework. If someone came in and they had a certain amount of, they had different yield goal levels, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 bushel, for example, on wheat, the slope of this line basically reflects that 2.4 conversion. And what that says is for every, I get 0.42 bushels back for every pound I put on of N. And if you work through different price scenarios, you'd say, well, if the price of wheat were 320, which is kind of our long-term average, you're going to keep putting on fertilizer right up until the plateau, so long as nitrogen is less than $1.34. So what does that mean? It means prices really don't matter. And then the fact that we don't factor in prices into our recommendations probably isn't a big problem, okay, if that's truly the case. Once again, we don't like that as economists because it says we don't matter. If prices don't matter, we don't matter. And we want to make a case that we're needed, you know. Now, here's a bunch of linear plateaus, and this is some actual research from Barney Gordon up at Belleville on sorghum. And, you know, the dots or the squares are the actual data, and then the lines are a best-fit statistical line and using linear plateau. And it's pretty darn hard to argue that linear plateau doesn't characterize that relationship very, very well. Now, the problem is if I told you here's all the yields, 1996 to 2002, and then I asked you, I said, well, what do you think yields will be in 2003? The question always is well, now you're asking me to forecast. And if you forecast, one of the models we use more than anything is what? It's an average, right? We talk about yield goals being some average. Well, if I averaged all those linear plateaus, I get something that looks like this. That's an average of a bunch of linear plateaus. So what it is it's a bunch of linear segments. It's not a mathematical curved line, but it's a bunch of linear segments based on averaging a bunch of linear plateau lines. But you can clearly see that starts to look nonlinear. This is some similar data from some work out in western Kansas that Alan did, a number of different site years and different studies or trials. And you can see the same thing is that those red lines, we just don't have all the points on them, but the red lines being the linear plateau in any given year or any given site year, some years we get no response to nitrogen, some year we get a very good response to nitrogen. You know, I mean, here's a year where no nitrogen had a low yield and we got all the way up to here before it plateaued. Then we got a year in here that's straight across. The blue, once again, is just the average of a bunch of linear plateaus. The blue line clearly looks nonlinear. Looks like it has some curvature to it. Well, what we did is we looked at, I think it was 16 studies, and they were basically from Bellevue and Scandia and then out in western Kansas, and we considered linear plateau, and then we considered four different curvilinear forms, and what we did is we said we want to statistically try to estimate a model that fits that blue line on the last graph the best, fits the average of all these linear plateaus. And what we found is more often than not, not every time, but more often than not, the quadratic plateau fit it fairly well. Okay, so that gives us some evidence that it's, on average, a quadratic plateau might be a good way to characterize yield response. In any given year, linear plateau might be the best, but on average, when we have to work with expectations, it might make sense. Now, the other thing just to point out is, remember I said we had four different nonlinear forms. They all look very similar if you graph them, but they all end up with quite a bit different optimal rates. So your choice of functional form is kind of sensitive. Okay, well, the nice thing about this nonlinear production function, this quadratic plateau, is it basically says economists matter now. You know, now prices matter. Okay, prices matter. And the other thing that's nice is it actually is consistent with a linear plateau in any given year. Okay, and we showed you, so if somebody says, no, the true relationship's linear plateau, this is consistent with that in a given year, it's just that in an expectation framework it becomes nonlinear. Okay, so what we then did is we estimated a model that basically fit that functional form. Specifically, what we did is we said, well, if you have no nitrogen, none in the soil, none applied as fertilizer, you get zero yield. No nitrogen at all, and we know that you literally can't observe absolutely zero nitrogen in the system. I mean, that's next to impossible, but it says if there was absolutely no nitrogen available to the plant, you get zero yield. We also said that we're going to plateau at whatever our yield goal is. Now, once again, if you go back and look at all those averages, those nonlinear plateaus, the average from Barney's work, the average from Allen's work, that never said that plateau was the highest yield you ever got. Said some years you got higher. So sometimes people say, well, if you pick a plateau of 60, you'll never get 65 bushels. It's like, no, that's not what it's saying. It says that's the plateau on average, okay? So that's 2 points. The third point we picked is we said we believe that what K-State fertilizer recommendation is, specifically nitrogen recommendation, is it is the economic optimal at long-term prices. Once again, if you read the publication that gives the K-State nitrogen recommendations, they won't mention prices, but what we said is we assumed that they believe that it was consistent with long-term prices. So now if I've got 3 points on a curve, I can mathematically define the curve. I have to have at least 3 points. We've got 3 points. And with those 3 points, I can now construct the math that goes with it. So now as an example, if I had yield goals of 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, I could find an economic optimal i.e. the K-State recommendation at long-term prices, but I could then shock it and say, what happens if prices change? Because I've now got a model that lets me do that. Prior to all this assumptions about quadratic plateau and whatnot, we didn't have the model behind it. Okay, so we did that, and we said, we've got something that we think it's kind of hard to argue with, right? If you believe K-State's recommendations, you almost have to believe ours, because they're built around K-State's. The only thing we did is we added the price component, so we felt that made sense. We embedded it all into an Excel spreadsheet, so you could go in and put in your soil test nitrogen, your yield goals, and your organic matter, and all the things that come into play, and prices, and it would give you recommendations. Now we could come back in 2005, and we'd say, here's how much you should cut back in response to these changing prices. Okay, so we did that, and we felt, you know, kind of pat ourselves on the back and thought we found it. We think we got the right answer. Well, then all of a sudden, 2005, people said, yeah, but what about irrigation? Irrigation, remember, pumping costs were going crazy in 2005, so they said, not only do I have to pay more for my nitrogen, but if I've got irrigated corn, for every bushel of corn I get, I also have to pay for water. So how does that come into play? The K-State recommendations don't distinguish between irrigated and non-irrigated, except for the fact that we have a maximum yield we plug in. So we barely got it done, and we said, oh, we got to go back and fix it. So we went back and fixed it. Okay. Then all of a sudden 2008 comes around, and people said, yeah, but you know, you guys have now talked about nitrogen, you've talked about pumping costs on irrigation, but now we're looking at phosphorus at $1.20 a pound for P2O5. Doesn't that factor in? And so we said, we got to fix it again. So we fixed it again, using the same approach as with nitrogen, although obviously phosphorus gets a lot more messy with backing out the equations. We use the sufficiency recs. In that publication, it talks about sufficiency and build and maintain. We use the sufficiency recommendations and backed out equations to get a quadratic plateau. And once again, we assumed quadratic plateau would make sense. So here's what we've done, as an example. This is irrigated corn with a yield goal of 225 bushels. So a user would plug in, I've got a 225 bushel yield goal. By definition, everything's going to plateau at my yield goal. Doesn't mean you can't get yields higher, it just says that's our projected yield. The green line is the quadratic plateau nitrogen production function. The blue line is an irrigation production function, which is developed based on some other work that Lloyd Stone did out in western Kansas. So it's completely separate. And then the red line is our quadratic plateau for the phosphorus production function, once again, assuming it's quadratic plateau and conditional upon all the numbers that we've got down here, you know, what our parts per million are and all that. Okay? So we've got three production functions. Now think about it, though, economically. What's the optimal level? All three of them are going to max out at the same yield, but if I put on half of the maximum input, you know, where 100% of the input gets me to my plateau, if I put on half of it, clearly I would have different yields. Half of what it takes to get the maximum yield out of phosphorus would get me a higher yield than it would out of nitrogen. So if you think about it this way, if I just drew a horizontal line at any level, it would tell me what level of input should I need and what would be the yield. Okay, so if I said I'm going to draw a line at 120 bushels, at 120 bushels I'd have a little bit of phosphorus, I'd have a little bit of nitrogen, and a little bit of water. And with that I would have an economic return. 120 bushels times the price minus a little bit of phosphorus cost minus a little bit of nitrogen cost minus a little bit of water cost. Well, what we're going to do is basically just keep moving that line up till we find you maximize returns. Okay, so if I move the line all the way up to 225, basically that says, well, we all know that that's not going to be the economic optimal. The economic optimal is never the maximum yield, right? It's always something less. Okay. So we factored that all, now that's all built into an Excel spreadsheet. There's a spreadsheet out on our web. You can go out there. It's just basically got different crops in it. So as an example, here's what it would look like. The blue numbers are inputs that someone would plug in. The black numbers are calculated. So I'm just going to focus on either wheat or corn. Corn is irrigated, wheat's dryland. Got 60 bushel yield goal on wheat, 225 bushel on corn. If I plug in long run prices, 322 on wheat, 235 on corn, 21 cents on nitrogen, and I assume phosphorus is free, because we argue that that's implicitly what K-State recommendations do. When we make nitrogen recommendations, we completely ignore what's going on in phosphorus. And when I do that, subject to some tiny little rounding errors that I haven't worried about, you know, in the prices, K-State's official recommendations, this would come right out of their publication, 104 on the wheat, given a 60-bushel yield goal, given 2% organic matter, 20 pounds soil test nitrogen. So they would recommend 104. That's what our model recommends. I said this rounding error is because of prices. Corn, they would recommend 300. We recommend 300. Sorghum, they recommend 140. We recommend 140. And then obviously soybeans, there is no nitrogen recommendation. If I go back and I say, well, let's leave the same prices, but now zero out nitrogen, put in the phosphorus price, you can see that our model gives the exact same recommendations, 28.5 basically, 38, 28, 30.6. So all I'm saying is we've added a component of prices that is not in the K-State recommendations, and if you assume long-run prices, our model will give you the same numbers back. Okay? But you also have to make this other assumption, that the price of other inputs is free. And that's not very realistic. Okay? So as an example, if I came in today and I said at today's prices, and these are kind of current prices for 2010, so thinking about wheat next year and corn next year and sorghum next year, current prices of what I could put on nitrogen and phosphorus for, our model would suggest that the fertilizer recommendation should be down about 11% on the N, about 16% on the P, 12% on corn, 22%. And the reason is one, you know, this price here is good compared to this price, but now what's going on is I'm not assuming other inputs are free. And that's what's driving why we're seeing the drops that we are, okay? So now to show you what it's going on graphically. This is the same graph I showed you earlier. If I ignore prices of other inputs, okay, if I ignore prices of other inputs, you give a quadratic production function, we can all do a derivative and take it times a price ratio and solve for optimal N and P and water, and that's what this reflects right here. It says this would be the optimal phosphorus if water and nitrogen were free. This would be, the green dot would be the optimal nitrogen if phosphorus and water were free. And then the blue is the optimal irrigation water if nitrogen and phosphorus are free. Okay, and that's how we've typically always done this. That's the very standard production function, take a derivative and set it equal to price ratio. But when you factor in the other prices, all of a sudden that phosphorus that was at almost 100% of what to get at max dropped all the way back here. It dropped much more than either the nitrogen or the irrigation. So these three dots are the economic optimal. Notice they're all at the exact same yield, which by definition, you can only get one yield. So we're getting the same yield, but we're cutting back, and you can see we're cutting back on phosphorus much more than we are on either of the other ones. And that's what our current spreadsheet does. It factors in all three inputs when gives you the optimal for all of them. Okay? And we'd argue that's the thing that's very relevant. So just kind of as another example, if I remember earlier, we had numbers that were around 9 to 11%, and I don't remember exactly what these were. All I did is I changed one. I didn't change nitrogen. I didn't change irrigation. I changed price of phosphorus, but you can notice we would actually say that you should put on less N. And we're contending that makes a lot of sense, but not many recommendations are built that way. Not many recommendations say, I'll tell you how much to cut back on nitrogen as a function of phosphorus price and vice versa. So this one actually accounts for all of them simultaneously. Now, the first time I presented this, I didn't have the irrigation component in there. I was at an extension meeting, and we were talking about it. And you know, you're always trying to get a feel for, is there buyback from the producers? And they seemed to agree quite a bit. And the first question I got was, because I was in Doug's area, was, where's K? Because the reality is if I've also got K in here, that would do the same thing too, right? The price of N, P, and K all need to be thought about simultaneously. So what we've got, like I said, right now is we've got something that we think has never really been done, but we think it makes sense. It's still some economists quoting, saying this out to agronomists, and we might get shot down. So just to kind of wrap it up, if we want to bring in the prices of inputs and outputs, and I mean that's the title of this whole symposium, we have to have this mathematical relationship. We have to have this production function. The official K-State recommendations do not have a production function. They've got recommendations as a function of a yield goal. That's not the same as yield as a function of nitrogen. Okay, so we backed it out. And we backed it out with a quadratic plateau, and we think it's very, very defendable on the end. The P might be a little less defendable, but it's very defendable on the end. We think, based on actual research from field trials, that support that. Once again, the reason we like it as economists is the quadratic plateau says there are diminishing returns. Now, I have went back in time and said, how do our model predicted rates compare to the official recommendations at historical prices? They don't change that much. And so, in other words, when historically we've ignored prices in our recommendations, that was probably fine. But when all of a sudden you've got phosphorus as $1 a pound, I would argue it's probably not fine. So I said the quadratic plateau allows us diminishing returns as prices matter. And here's the biggest one that we think we're still needing to make sure that, you know, everything makes sense. But we think that we have to be thinking about multiple inputs simultaneously. Typically, our recommendations say, here's what we recommend for nitrogen, holding all else constant. We know that when most of the trials were done looking at yield response to nitrogen, we assumed everything else was non-limiting, and vice versa with phosphorus. So we think that it makes sense to do this. You either have to look at them simultaneously or assume they have zero cost, and clearly that's not the case. So with that, I don't know if we have time for questions, but I'll...
We have a couple minutes for questions.
Close there.
Questions for Kevin. Get it started.
Oh, yeah. I have to say, excellent presentation. What is the, you were talking about farmers, because that's quite important for these kind of things. How are they taking on, have they changed their management practices to find, because this is going to lead to an improvement in profitability, instead of trying to target yield, but trying to target profitability, how's this impacting on them?
Okay, the question is, so have producers done anything with this, basically, paraphrasing? And my answer would be no, in all honesty. I think very few are. When we first presented it, remember, irrigation costs were going high. And we had crop consultants tell us, no, we are backing up on our nitrogen rates on the irrigated farms. We're not really on the non-irrigated. So what they said is, come on, you know, you guys can give us numbers out to the third decimal, to the tenth decimal if you want, you know, right? It's a mathematical equation. And they said, yeah, we kind of agree, but not really. So we're still going with our gut feel. I think last year, though, when phosphorus got to a dollar plus a pound, I think they were looking a little closer again. But have people embedded these algorithms into their decisions? I would have to say at this point, probably not. But part of that's for good reason. It was two economists, for the most part, doing this. I mean, we've added Dorvar's name, but like I said, I'm not going to hold him responsible for things. So I'm not convinced we've got buy-in from our agronomists yet. And that's still the next step. They either have to tell us we're completely wrong, or if they agree, then maybe we'll get buy-in, because obviously the producers will listen to them as much as anybody.
Other questions for Kevin? My question is, do you know where the origin of that 10 times organic matter in determining how much nitrate gets released from organic matter? I know you said you're not an agronomist.
Let's see, where's all of our, none of the people that developed MF2586 are here. I couldn't tell you. Maybe, Alan, do you have any idea where that came up with? I mean, it's numbers that, it's been a combination of Dave Whitney, Ray Lehman, Dave Mengel, Dale Likem. I mean, it's been just, and I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't.
All right, let's give Kevin a big hand.